When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Baker's, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Baker's worth it every time. Baker's, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
I'm so glad to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you to make better financial decisions in your life. This episode, okay, I'm going to step into it again. Social Security. I know the Clark Stinks are already, you're already getting your fingers ready to type a Clark Stinks. Because no matter what I say about Social Security, do you know we get a stronger reaction to that than any other topic I ever talk about all year long? Another heated topic, student loans. There's new information you need to know on the student loan front. It's ugly, so I got alternatives for you when it comes to paying for college education. So, Social Security is obviously in financial trouble, something that's been clear for 10 years, but now we're getting closer and closer to train wreck time. Here's the issue. We in the United States are an aging population. The number of babies being born is way down per population. We're below, if it were not for immigration, both legal and illegal, the United States would have a declining population right now. And so what's happening is we have fewer and fewer workers paying into Social Security to pay for an older and older population of more and more people on Social Security. So the math has gotten worse because when Social Security got into financial trouble 40 years ago, there was a commission set up to protect the politicians, the elected officials. And this commission was given the power of coming up with a plan to fix the financial problems of Social Security for the indefinite future. It was considered to be a 100-year fix. But nobody saw the demography coming, that the number of Americans would get older and older and older with less and less people younger and younger. So the fix from 40 years ago no longer works. And Social Security will run out of money sometime in the next, as early as 8 years from now or 11 years from now, somewhere in that time period. So running out of money, what does that mean to current and future Social Security recipients? If nothing is done, it doesn't mean there's no Social Security check. It means that the Social Security payments would be roughly around 80 cents on the dollar instead of the promised 100 cents on the dollar moving forward. So obviously, politically, that's untenable. The politicians of both parties unwilling to discuss this, address it, because they don't want to talk about, you know, you eating your vegetables. They only want to talk about handing out candy. So I'm going to do it. And so how do we fix this? It's not that hard, but the longer we wait, the more painful it is. If we would have done it 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when it was clear that we had a demographic time bomb, it would have been really easy. Now it's going to be more difficult. They do nothing for another decade. It'll be much more difficult and painful. I want to say this first. I know a lot of people in polling under age 40 say there will never be a Social Security check coming their way. And that's true. It's going to be direct deposit. there's still going to be money coming your way for Social Security. As a practical percent of the money you need to live on in retirement, it will probably effectively shrink some, but there will still be a Social Security system. It's one of the most popular programs we have in the United States. So how would I fix it? Well, something that would fix half the shortfall is that people who are at the higher end of the income level right now have their Social Security taxes capped beyond a certain income. I think it's somewhere around $169,000 a year. So if you were to raise that cap, and regardless of what somebody earned, they continued to pay into Social Security, that, as long as you maintained along with that, that their benefit from Social Security would go up at the same time, that would eliminate like half the shortfall just by itself. If higher income earners both paid in more and received more as a check. Now, if you wanted to play rough and tumble and play class warfare, you could lift the taxation cap on higher income earners, but not raise what they receive. That would eliminate somewhere 75 or so percent of the gap. I think that's not right, that it should not be a transfer program from wealthier people to everyone else. Social Security has always been one for all for one. So I would cover half the gap by raising the taxes on wealthier people and also raising their benefit in tandem. And still, that would cover more than half the gap, probably. And, you know, when you're dealing with big numbers like this, I'm rounding off, and my round off could be a little high, a little low, but not far. Second thing you'd have to do is Americans are living longer, except for during the pandemic. So Social Security used to last about as long as the average lifespan. Now it lasts way beyond that. So I would delay when people receive Social Security. You know, it used to be full retirement age was 65. It's right now set to go to 67. Then in the future, if you raised it to a higher age, that would easily fill the rest of the gap. So two things we'd have to do to make a difference. And in neither case are you reducing the benefit once somebody receives it, which is really what the social contract has been about. We could talk all day long about the role that you could have people take some of the money and put it in investments instead of have in the Social Security system, all of that. That's a conversation for another day. Because right now, the fact is, I have just spent 7 minutes talking about something that maybe not more than one or two of 538 members of the U.S. House and U.S. Senate would ever have the guts to talk about because they're cowards. Politicians are, well, they're salespeople. And what do salespeople want to do? They only want to tell you good things so they get the sale, contributions from you or your votes or both. They don't want to tell you the solid, rock-hard truth, because they're too worried, they get too addicted to being elected, to being willing to say what you need to hear. And sometimes what you need to hear isn't pleasant. But as a country, I want us to be strong. I mean, we're coming up on the 4th of July, which is my favorite day of the year, because I love this country so much. But sometimes it seems that politicians in the United States today love themselves and their party more than they love this country. And so I want us to focus on fixing structural problems we have in the United States. Because a lot of Americans are sour because they feel like America just doesn't function well anymore, that it doesn't work well anymore. So let's start making things work again. Let's make that our July 4th goal, to make America work again where it functions the way it should. And I could go on all day long about this, but it's time for your questions. But before we go to that, Krista, Clark.com/ClarkStinks. Let's see if we can break the all-time record number of posts at Clark Stinks.
Let's not. And
with
keep them
brief. All the Social Security posts and all the slings and arrows that'll come my way. I am ready for them. I can take them because I'm not looking for your vote. I'm not looking for your contributions.
And please don't send in pages and pages because I can't read them.
Oh, it's funny with Social Security. We get basically, there used to be this expression, a Michener novel. Mm-hmm. James Michener, I think was his name. He wrote these books that were like 1,000 pages long. That's what we get from people whenever I talk about Social Security.
So John in Texas has a non-complicated question for you.
Ready?
He says, you talked about purchasing a dash cam for your car. What happens if you mess up and cause an accident? Can the other person subpoena the data?
Yes, potentially, yes, they can. It would be their insurer if it's a big claim or whatever. So if you know you're a terrible driver, ignore if you know you are very aggressive behind the wheel, rapid starts, stops, crazy lane changes, you drive a car where the turn signal is illegal to use, you don't want a dash cam in your car. On the other hand, if you are a careful driver, you want that dash cam. We've shared in the past your story that the dash cam saved you in an accident where the other driver was trying to pretend it was your fault.
Yeah.
The officer watched your dash cam video right there and said, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And then went back and yelled at the other person for lying to her.
All right. Let's go to Sharon in Georgia's question. My adult son needs extensive dental work on his teeth from grinding over the years. He is thinking of going to a dentist in Costa Rica to do the work and save money. Do you have any suggestions regarding dentistry outside of the United States?
It's a harder process with the two countries that dominate affordable dentistry in the world are Hungary and Costa Rica. They are really generally respected for it, but it doesn't mean that the care you're getting is going to be absolutely fantastic. The problem in this area is that you have every practice claiming that they are absolutely the greatest and the one you should go to. Yeah, I saw an article that really helps. It doesn't tell you who to go to. It tells you how to narrow down who would likely be a good choice for you to use in Costa Rica. I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Americans go each year to Costa Rica for dental care. The dentists are it's pretty variable in quality and also how they handle follow-up. And that's where we've heard from U.S.-based dentists to always mention, hey, how's somebody going to have their follow-up visits if they do have a problem with major surgery? There's a publication, believe it or not, that's mostly about what's known as medical tourism, people going overseas for complicated operations, things like that, Medical Tourism Magazine. And they have put together a guide of what you should look for, what are the steps, the things you should ask, the way you ferret out who's the real deal and who's not. It's not going to say, go to this practice, go to that practice, go to the other, but it'll tell you how you narrow it down and improve the likelihood that you're going to find a high-quality dentist in Costa Rica. The savings are enormous.
And for general medical tourism, we do have an article on Clark.com about that, and that links to an international organization if you're doing general medical tourism. Michelle in Ohio wrote in and said, we purchased a duplex from my dad for $50,000. My 30-year-old son lives in the bottom, currently rent-free. We have renters in the upper unit. If we sell now, I believe we could get $300,000 or more for it.
And paid how much for it?
$50,000.
All right.
Can we avoid
$250,000 in gain?
Can we avoid capital gain taxes since our grown son has lived in it since we purchased it? Anything else we can do to limit expenses should we decide to sell?
So you can avoid taxation for now by doing what's known as a 1031 exchange, where it's a process where you identify another property you'd like to put your money in and execute buying that property within a period of time. And there are like a lot of steps involved with doing a 1031. That doesn't eliminate the tax, it only delays it. In the situation you have, though, you may have a divisible circumstance where part of the property, because half of it was being used by family, So it was not investment. The other half was, you may be able to reduce what portion would be subject to capital gains. So instead of 250, it may be 125 potentially. But this kind of thing, I'm way out on a limb. And before you proceed, you want to sit down with either a CPA who does tax or with an enrolled agent. That's a specialist who does tax work who is registered with the IRS. And they will go through the rules with you and figure out how to structure this the best way to potentially reduce the tax. I'm not a big fan of 1031s right now, though. The portion that would be subject to capital gains, I'd rather you pay the tax on, because tax rates in the U.S. are historically low, unusually low, and so paying the capital gains on it is something I'd be happy to pay, because it's better to have all the gain and not have to worry about tax again than to have a tax time bomb later that could be taxed at a much higher rate. So coming up ahead, I promised I was going to talk about student loans, and I'm going to do it, although the numbers are not so pretty, what I'm going to share with you.
Have you heard about Doublenomics? It's okay if you haven't. It's extremely niche and practiced by Discover. Here's an example. Discover automatically doubles the cashback earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cashback to $300. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Whoa, landing an account this big will totally change my landscaping business. It's going to mean hiring more guys and more equipment and new trucks for the new guys to drive the new equipment in. I don't know if I'm ready.
You can do this. And Ford Pro FinSimple can help. Our experts are ready to make growing pains less painful for your business with flexible financing solutions that meet the needs of your business today when you need them. Get started at FordPro.com/financing.
First, the bad news. SAP Business AI won't help you generate cubist versions of your family's holiday photos. But it will help you understand which supplier is best to help you roll out your plant-based packaging in Southeast Asia, identify the training your junior project manager needs to rise up the ranks, and automate repetitive tasks while you focus on big innovations, so you can be ready for the next opportunity. Revolutionary technology. Real-world results. That's SAP Business AI.
This is so wild. At the very moment that Americans are overwhelmingly questioning the value of a college education, the interest rates on student loan borrowings have gone way, 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 way up. For the base rate for the borrowing that people can do on a basic student loan that has a cap, which you can borrow, you're looking at over 6.5%. Then you look at the rates that most people use, which are where parents are taking out a loan for their kids or a graduate student who exceeds what they can borrow on a graduate loan, which, by the way, is over 8% now. The parent plus loan, over 9% now, 9.08%. Borrowing for college has become cost prohibitive. And so I want to talk about two things with this. One, so many employers have adopted scholarship programs for their part-time or full-time workers. Many of these programs got to jump through hoops, but in the best of cases, you can get a college degree for free in return for working somewhere between 20 and 40 hours a week, or a heavily subsidized college education for working there 20 to 40 hours a week. I love this because people who have work experience while they're in college end up better off when they're finished with college looking for a job because of the experience they have. When I graduated from college, I had worked full-time through most of undergraduate and worked full-time through graduate school. It was great because I had so much work experience by the time I finished grad school that finding a job was effortless, and that was during a time that the job market was really poor in the United States. So there's that factor. And I want to mention very briefly one other part of this, And that is, it's clear over and over again in study after study that the degree that you get is more important than the institution that degree is from. So you could go to an ultra high prestige school for undergraduate school, I'm just talking undergraduate here, and get a liberal arts degree, and you will earn less than someone going to a third tier state school who gets a degree in engineering, in science or medicine, computer technology, any of the fields that are in high demand in what's often called the STEM area plus medicine. So if you get a degree from an ultra low cost school, but it's in a high demand field that tends to pay more and all the rest, you're going to be much better off because you're not going to have the student loan debt and the job market will smile on you. The job market will love you. So you don't have to hope that you get into your stretch school. You don't have to hope that, I mean, my whole life I've dreamt of going to blah, blah, blah school. Dream instead about not owing money and your parents not owing money in order to get that degree, because that dream is not out of touch. It's not out of reach. It's completely doable. Krista?
All right. This question is from Eric in Georgia. I have a new college student starting at an out-of-state school in the fall.
Oh, opposite land of what I just talked about. Okay.
She did not qualify for a lot of financial aid due to household income. Okay. Right now, we're looking at unsubsidized loan for her first year of $25,000 at 4.75%.
4.75, if it's a fixed rate, is a really great rate, because that's well below the federal financing rates. If it's fixed, you're doing really, really well there.
She should be eligible for more scholarship money after her first year via ROTC and her particular college. Is it a good plan to take the loan, which does not have to be repaid until hopefully 2028, and at that time take the money out of my retirement account, which I will have access to penalty-free in that year? Current balance in the retirement account, a traditional IRA, is approximately $1.1 million. There is a possibility of paying off the loan in full next year in February when I get my annual bonus, but the bonus amount is not guaranteed. I also think it's a better use of the bonus to invest it and float the loan until 2028, since the loan is at 4.75% and the average market returns are closer to 8 to 10%, so I'd be ahead at least 3%. Thanks for your opinion.
Okay, so one thing's certain. You're talking about a loan rate of 4.75%. You're talking about an expected stock market return of 8 to 10%. We're not going to have returns like that over the next few years, because we're going to have what's known as reversion to mean. The stock market is significantly overvalued right now, and it doesn't mean the market collapses. It means that over time, the market finds a reasonable value. And it always overshoots both directions. So I would not count on over the next several years while your child's in college that suddenly the market's going to keep doing this big return per year and you're going to be making money on the spread. When you have the money to pay off this loan, pay off this loan. And the ROTC intention, I should have mentioned that. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention the military when I was talking about affordable ways to get a college education. That is one of the greatest ways, and we are so short of people who are interested right now in going into the military. That was my bad. I didn't mention that. But the ROTC is going to be a friend to your child, and she's going to help the country at the same time.
Allison in South Carolina says, Clark, your show has so many useful tidbits. I need elaboration on rental insurance and credit cards. I have a USAA credit card that has an auto rental collision damage waiver. I rented an electric vehicle at Tampa over Memorial Day weekend because it was much cheaper to rent than the gas vehicles. At the counter, I was asked if I wanted to use one of their insurance add-ons or my own insurance. I said my own. The clerk asked if I had an electric vehicle. I said I didn't. I was told that my policy wouldn't cover the rental. I was still allowed to waive the insurance, but this confused me, and I wondered the whole time that I had the rental if I was actually protected. I paid for it with my USAA credit card. Was my credit card protecting me? Does my personal insurance come first? Was there a third option I didn't know about? Or if I wasn't covered at all, what advice do you have for me and other listeners who own gas vehicles and want to rent an electric vehicle?
Okay, I'm going to take a wild stab because the only company I know that rents electric vehicles in big numbers is Hertz. Mm-hmm. And I've read this over and over again that Hertz must have their counteragents trained to lie to people that when they rent one of the electric vehicles from Hertz, oh, no, you're not covered under your own insurance. Forget that. You've got to take out this huge collision damage waiver stuff or, wow, you're going to be paying for a new car. And it's completely false. When you use your own auto insurance and a credit card as the 1-2 punch when you rent a car, they will exclude certain types of vehicles. They're going to exclude Italian sports cars, ultra expensive luxury cars. There's no blanket exemption that I've seen or read about anywhere on someone renting an electric car. There's just another pitch to try to get you to buy rip-off pseudo insurance from a car rental agency. Before you rent a car, read our briefing or anybody's briefing. We got a nice briefing at Clark.com that walks you through how to protect yourself from the ripoff artists at the car rental counter. They're going to try to cheat you and get you to buy all kinds of trash from them when you're at the counter.
So that, and the USAA card isn't on our list of the credit cards that offer you full, like, first.
No, they're secondary.
Primary insurance. Yeah. Yeah, there are four on our list. But
So the thing with the USAA, for people who are USAA, again, another military angle here on our podcast, is USAA, most people who have insurance from USAA also have the USAA credit card. So they work kind of together so that whatever USAA insurance isn't paying, the USAA credit card picks up. So having those two in tandem when you rent a car is a really good idea when you are a USAA member.
Sabrina in Florida says, here's an update to my $25,000 rabies bill story.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah. If you recall, the hospital charged $25,000 for one single rabies shot at the ER and wouldn't budge on the price after I contacted dozens of different departments and the BBB. I took your advice and I submitted the story to my local news station. They reported on it and even filmed the interview with me. Sadly, nothing came of the broadcast. Ultimately,
really?
I was responsible for $5,000 of the $25,000 bill after insurance. Still a lot of money for one rabies shot, if you ask me. Luckily, I was able to claim financial hardship and have the bill removed. Thanks for your advice, but now I'm not so sure big hospital networks care about bad press anymore.
So this is an interesting, interesting follow-up, and I appreciate it very much. Eventually, it ultimately did work out for you. The hospital got the $20,000 from insurance and wrote off your $5,000. It's terrible that your insurance paid $20,000 for one rabies shot. All the inflation in medical care in the United States, all of it is hospital-based now. I mean, the inflation elsewhere in medical is insignificant, and it's because of hospitals trying to create local monopolies or what are called shared monopolies or duopolies, where one or two hospital systems control all the beds and own a lot of the medical practices, the doctor practices, in a metro area. It gives them a leg up on the insurance companies, and they impose prices on the insurance companies instead of it being a negotiation. And that's what's led to things like $25 for a single shot. So it is a problem.
$25,000.
What did I say, $25?
Yeah.
$25,000. That's like, there's a movie, I think, from the 80s. 250 big ones. No, that was from The Jerk.
Oh.
It was $250,000. So $25,000 for a shot. And it's just crazy. And you want to know why health insurance keeps going up? It's because of these hospital maneuverings going on to create these local monopolies. And this one I'm not smart enough to know how to fix. But you did the right thing. It's cool that my suggestion of getting a TV station to do a story, they did a story. I'm shocked it did not get the hospital to do anything, that they weren't concerned at all about reputational harm. That's not my normal experience, even in markets where a hospital has a monopoly or a shared monopoly. Ah, well, doesn't change my advice on that. But I want to thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast. Know what we're devoted to. It's you. I want you to learn ways to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off. And if you're not a subscriber yet to our newsletter, I hope you'll consider subscribing to our daily newsletter. Go to clark.com/newsletter. The subscription price for our newsletter is free. The information in it, priceless.